I always say ask, ask, ask. And even ask questions you know the answers to. I feel like that's like some kind of lawyer tactic that people do, but they ask questions regardless of whether you know the answer, because you almost want to get a seller to lie to you, because then you know how trustworthy they are, right? If somebody's willing to lie to you about something, it's a red flag.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
Doing good, Mark. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, doing well. I talked to somebody that we both know well, and that's one of our own, Chuck Mullins.
Mr. Chuck Mullins, good
Chuck
man.
Mullins. He is, yeah. He joins us on the interview on the video part portion of the interview wearing his Quiet Light shirt, which he had embroidered. The only person at Quiet Light that has one. Although he did tell me that he made one for you, and I haven't seen you in it yet.
He did. I almost put it on today. It's a little big, so I swim in it. I need to put on some weight or run it through two cycles of the dryer.
Well, it would have been so appropriate because, you know, he's wearing his shirt in this interview. You would have been wearing your shirt, and he needs to make one for me, though, of course.
He should. You're the founder of Quiet Light Brokerage.
Absolutely.
You should have like a logo in the back of your office there that says Quiet Light Brokerage. What's wrong with you?
I've thought about it, but yeah, most of my office is really a mess. If you've seen this on video, and we'll talk about this a little bit, my office is usually a mess. It's all about angles, right? My angle is a little bit off center today because I don't want to show you the rest of my office. So yeah, but this actual episode is going to be great for video. If you're listening in your car, if you're listening on a podcast, you'll still get a lot of value out of it. But I'd recommend at some point checking out the YouTube channel. We are separating our channels, so we will have a new channel just for the podcast episodes. And this episode will kind of kick that off. So make sure that you go there, you subscribe. And the reason that this is a good one to watch on the YouTube channel is because we're reviewing due diligence tools in this episode. We actually go over 27 different due diligence tools. We bring them up on the screen and you can see me kind of browsing around and fumbling around on some of these sites as we talk about how you can use this in your due diligence process. Any buyer out there who's looking to acquire a business in the next year or so, you know, due diligence is probably the most important part of that process for you, making sure that you're checking under every rock and every hidden area to see, is there anything wrong with this business that I need to be aware of? Well, Chuck and I go over 27 tools that he's used personally in his past of buying businesses. So really interesting episode from that standpoint. He brings a lot of experience in buying and selling businesses for, do you know how long he's been doing it? I can't remember offhand.
97, I think. He was self-employed in college, making more in 1 month than most people make in a year when he was in college.
Right, right. And then he and I have been presenting at PubCon for 7 years. And we go over this in the video a little bit, but we've been presenting for 7 years at PubCon together. And people always come to see Chuck. And then hopefully I can pick up a couple of the scraps that come off the table when he presents. So gives a great presentation on how to go about buying online businesses.
And just to point out the obvious or maybe not so obvious, technically we represent the sellers in what we do, but we can't help them and help them well unless we also help as many buyers as possible. So it's many people would think that what you're about to present with Chuck is in contrast to what we do, but we're always about full disclosure, always making sure that buyers are making good investments. And so that both them and the sellers are happy at the closing table and it's a successful transaction down the road as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Again, we do represent the sellers, but if our seller is getting sued 3 or 4 months later, that's a pretty bad job on our part. So it's important that both buyer and seller walk away from a deal happy and winning on that deal. So that's the goal. You get a transaction that wins. And part of that process is due diligence. I used to hate like thorough due diligences. When I first started Quiet Light and I got like, you know, a monster due diligence list, I would kind of groan and be like, oh man, this is going to be a pain. Now, when I see a well thought out due diligence list, it makes me happy because I know that that buyer is going to be really happy and that deal is going to go through because they're going to really inspect that business thoroughly.
Yeah, well thought out is important, not just a massive list, but a well thought out list that's specific to the business that's being purchased. I've seen blanket due diligence lists come through where somebody clearly copied and pasted. I'm excited about this episode. Chuck's a really, really smart guy, a successful entrepreneur, and I think a lot of people are going to learn some good stuff here. Let's go.
Very good. Yep, let's get to it. Hey, Chuck, how are you?
Doing great. How are you, Mark?
I'm good. Thanks for joining me on the call. I see you have your nice Quiet Light shirt on. You're the only one at Quiet Light that has that shirt.
That's because I took the initiative to have it made.
Right. We'll get them for everybody else eventually.
Actually, I think I bought Joe one, but he hasn't worn it. So.
Oh, really? I got to start getting on him so he wears them for the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so for this podcast, if you guys are listening to this in your car, this would be one of the ones that I would recommend going over to YouTube. We've set up a new channel on YouTube just for the interviews. We're going to put all of our interviews on that channel. I would recommend looking at that because we're going to review a bunch of due diligence tools. A little bit of background between Chuck and myself. Chuck and I have been presenting at PubCon, 7 years, I think?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, a very long time. Chuck invited me to speak with him at PubCon a while ago. We've been doing it ever since. We've had other people join us occasionally to talk about buying and selling websites. But he and I have been talking about that. And I typically would talk on the sell side, and Chuck was talking on the buy side. And the result was that more people were interested in what Chuck had to say than what I was ever had to say. So I figured it'd be good to have you on here, both so people can get to know you a bit better, but also to review some of the due diligence tools that you've used in the past in buying online businesses. So let's just do a quick introduction for you as far as your background. What's your background in buying and selling online businesses?
So I started my first website back in 1996. You know, it took a few years, made a bunch of money, was in college, just kind of doing really well, and made more money than, you know, than I was living on. So I started looking at doing various investments. So I started looking at real estate franchises. I was looking at car washes and storage facilities and laundromats. And nothing ever just kind of really worked for me or really piqued my interest enough. You know, I dabbled in real estate, but everything just kept kind of drawing me back to the internet business. So then, you know, I had made a few websites that were successful, but I started thinking about, you know, well, what if I could acquire somebody's company and then just build upon that and stand on somebody else's shoulders instead of trying to prove out a model myself, you know, use a model that's been proven by somebody else and then just take all the knowledge I had and the expertise and grow that. So I started doing really well. And at a certain point, I just felt like, you know, presenting at a conference and kind of giving back. And then that's when I reached out to you. And I think one of my initial presentations I gave was with Jason Quiet Light, and we did it at Affiliate Summit, I don't even know, 8 or 9 years ago. So
yeah, and I remember that. I was in the audience for that presentation, and then that was January. I remember it specifically because it was really cold at that conference in Las Vegas. The fountains were frozen when we got out of the hotel. I was kind of surprised about that. So cool. So yeah, you've been doing this presentation for a long time. And I know whenever we do the presentation, when you get to the slide on due diligence tools, all the phones in the room go up to take pictures because people are really interested to know what sort of tools they can use to do due diligence. So we're going to review some of these tools here as well as talk about some of the principles buyers might want to apply when you're doing your due diligence. As always, we'll just throw out the blanket cover your tail sort of disclaimer here. Due diligence is ultimately a buyer's responsibility. Make sure that you're doing it. Make sure that you are bringing in professionals. What we're going to do is we're going to give some advice and some things that we've seen work. But by all means, this is not complete when you're talking about due diligence. You really need to apply a complete process to the business that you are that you are looking at. So I'm going to share my screen here and open this up. And I'm just going to share the full screen, and hopefully all my notices are shut off so that people don't get those. But can you see that, Chuck? Is that coming up for you?
Yeah.
All right, good, good. So here we go. We're going to just get started right away with this list of tools, and I'll be browsing through the websites as you talk about the individual ones. And the first one that we're going to talk about is Centurica, and they're a full-service due diligence firm. They're the only one of the sort that we have on this list. So why don't you talk a little bit about Centurica, what they do, and why they made this list?
Sure. So Chris Yates is the owner of Centurica. They've been around for quite a while, and Chris runs a buying and selling website conference called Rhodium, and Rhodium Weekend, I think, is kind of the official name. But I ran into Chris way back when I started to look at buying and selling businesses. He was the first person. You know, I'm always looking for knowledge, right? Looking to learn more. So I was doing some searches and came across his conference and went to it kind of on a whim. because there was no information about the conference because it was the first one that they ever had. So I was like trying to figure it out. And I thought, well, for the money, maybe I'll pick up something. And if not, it's not a total loss because, you know, I'm just going to go to Vegas and hang out. You know, Chris was a real smart guy, and I ended up, I think I was probably the first one we to get into his mastermind group. So I'm in a mastermind group with Chris and a bunch of other entrepreneurs, and he does this this great due diligence product where he just kind of takes it over from you and will do like a full blown due diligence review on a business that you're going to acquire. And I would never say that you should hand over fully the reins to somebody else to do your due diligence, but you should allow, you know, if you're going to hire somebody, do it in parallel with them. So that way you're just getting, you know, a second, third set of eyes on your due diligence and on the business that you're looking to acquire. So they offer various levels. And so it looks like they've got something from $59 right there, all the way up to, I think, a $5,000 package. That's kind of like a soup to nuts version. So.
Yeah. And just looking through the website, they have a whole team of people here that are associated with them. A lot of these people, you and I know, we know them through Rhodium Weekend and through that mastermind group as well. These are some really smart guys, good guys to be able to just get on the phone with and get their feedback. In fact, I'm seeing a few guys here, Mike Nunez. He's been on the podcast with us before and super smart guy. A lot of these guys are Peter Kearns is a really good contact as well. These are people that you can arrange calls with and bounce some ideas off of. The amount of money, $5,000. Some people might balk at that sort of price tag. But what do you think? Do you think that's worth spending that much money on a due diligence report?
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, with QuietLight, we're generally not dealing with the lower end deals, right? So we're generally dealing with mid to high six figures, mid to low seven figure deals. So, you know, $5,000, and that's their highest package, right? They've got stuff that's cheaper, but how can you go wrong? You know, spending, you're doing $1 million deal. What's $5,000 is what, 0.5%? I think it's probably money well spent.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree. And the only asterisk I would put to any of this is that whenever you are hiring somebody on the outside to potentially look for problems, understand that what they're going to do is they're going to find problems because that's what you're hiring them to do. And they should do that. So this is not a criticism of Centurica by any means or an attorney that's looking out for liability issues. But as the buyer, understand that you need to take that information, process it through a business decision that you're making. Any sort of due diligence tool, any of the ones that we offer here, that's the way that you should be going about using that information. It fits into the larger scheme. All right, let's move on. Centurica is a good service. If anyone wants an introduction to Chris Yates, either Chuck or I can provide an introduction to Chris as well. The next two are related, obviously, Google.com and Google Trends. Everybody knows what Google is. I'm sure most people know what Google Trends are. How would you use each of these sites in a due diligence process?
Sure. So with Google, right? I mean, it's just a matter of Googling things either about the business, about the person. You know, if you're buying a business, Google the terms that are around the business and look for red flags, right? Look for, you know, if they've got, you know, one-star review, you know, average one-star review, maybe that tells you something about the business. You know, look for complaints, things that are negative about the business, right? So just, it's kind of one of those, you know, catch-all due diligence plays where you're just kind of sorting through all of the information that you can find on a given business and or person. Never just research the business, always research the person who's selling the business as well, because you can find out a lot of stuff and make sure that you're avoiding, you know, or potentially avoid some of the pitfalls if somebody has done some sketchy stuff in the past. You can find that out.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can learn a lot about their background as well. I know if you do a search for me, a lot of the places that I've written for come up. But years ago, I was involved in a lawsuit in those first couple of pages. And so anyone that was doing research on me, I would often get those sort of questions. Well, what happened there? And everything was fine. I didn't mind the questions. But people that were being smart and doing due diligence knew to ask about that.
And don't just look at the first page of Google. Look at the second, third, fourth, fifth, right? Because anybody can hire a reputation management company that'll push some of those negative reviews, you know, to the second, third page. But they'll be there generally still, you know, just maybe a little lower.
Right. And if anyone wonders and are looking at the screen, I did not play hockey. So even though I'm from Minnesota, I'm not a hockey player. There's a couple other Mark Dousts out there that have gotten their name out there. So Google Trends, You'll see what search term I put in there.
Yeah. So type in paleo recipe or paleo diet, I mean, because paleo is a little different. So if you look at the screen, what is
change the date range.
Yeah, change the date range. That's, there's a little, you know, in January, you see that giant spike because that's when everybody is getting into a diet mode. Kick that out even further.
So we're looking right now, let's do 2004 to present. So we'll do the entire history of Google Trends. There we go.
Sure. So, you know, if you're looking to buy a business and you're seeing, use Google Trends to figure out what the trends are. You know, here you'll see there's like a giant up peak that just kind of went up. And then all of a sudden it just starts to kind of trail off. And you can find things like this. And then you also notice that there's like ups and downs, like intra year. So that would be like the seasonality of the business, right? So just because you see like this one giant peak, which correlates with this January, and then, you know, it'll throughout the rest of the year, it drops into December, where December's at its low around Christmas time, and then it spikes immediately back up. So you can look for not only seasonality, but you can look for long-term trends. And when you're looking at businesses, think about whether the business is a trendy business versus an evergreen business. So diet in general is a trendy business. If you look at almost any diet, you'll see like there's it goes up, and then all of a sudden it tails off, right? There's something that made it go up because it got popular, and then it'll trend off. I personally, you know, one of the businesses I bought was a paleo website, and I managed to buy it exactly at the peak market. And then
right about there, right? Right around January of 2013. Early 2013. Yep.
And it was like, it was going up and up. I'm like, great. And then it went down. And it was less great. So luckily we were able to do a little bit of magic and kind of keep the revenue going by trying to grow the business. But it's another story.
Something else that you can do with this. So as many people know, I own Catholic Singles, and the chart out for Catholic Singles doesn't look that great when you look at it. Something that I've learned from this chart and from a few other places is, if you think that you're buying a website that gets lots of natural search traffic, be careful to make sure that it's not branded search traffic. So what's happening here is the previous owner was losing out to a competitor who was beating them in a brand search. And so the site still gets lots of natural search traffic to a keyword that still has a lot of relevance, but he lost a lot of brand relevance as well. So you can, if it's a large enough property, you can often pick up on brand trends and whether or not you're going to have to compete on that level as well. You can type in competing services and see what their trend is over time as well. And you can actually compare the two together. So you can see how competition is playing along with maybe what you're looking at acquiring.
And then if you scroll down, you can do it by region as well. So what are the countries that something's popular in? So maybe it was a US-based company and you see, hey, well, look, it's doing well in Canada, South America, or I guess not in that case, it wasn't South America, but Australia, and I think it was Mexico maybe. So maybe you expand into some of those other countries.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Google Trends, lots of good data out there. I would recommend, again, putting in your whatever competitors you know of and comparing the traffic and the trends for the competitors to get a sense for how those are working together.
And just kind of one additional point would be, Google Trends is the search volume of a specific keyword. So it's not some magic formula. It's how many people are searching for something. So sometimes people search, the way they search for things changes over time. So you just want to kind of remember that just because, you know, people might've been searching for, I don't know, blue widgets, but now they're calling it, instead of blue widgets, they're calling it, you know, blue fuzzies, right? So it doesn't always mean that the actual market is declining in it. Sometimes it can just be a change in the way people are searching.
Yeah, I think an example of that would be internet marketing has switched over to digital marketing. And so you see the phrase used to refer to something slightly different over time. So that's a good point. All right, let's move off this chart because it's sort of depressing. State business websites. This is one that I haven't really seen people use a whole lot of, but it's a really good idea to use state business websites.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the basic of going to you know, whatever state the company is in, doing a search for the business, finding out who the owners are, if there's any kind of red flags that maybe appear in that, just some basic due diligence there.
Yeah, this one's not coming up here. But when you do the search,
What will happen is you'll see the records with the state, whether or not they filed in good standing, any other possible red flags that would come up. It's really just checking a box, making sure that everything is on the up and up with that business search. Maybe we can come back to this if that comes up again. Built With is a really cool tool, and it shows all the technologies that a website was built with, right?
Yep, absolutely. So if you want to look at like the technology stack, is it your internet out?
Nope, I just typed it in wrong.
I guess your internet wouldn't be out considering where.
That's right. That's right. Right. So we could take a look to see what QuietLight Brokerage is built on. And you can see that we have Google conversion tracking. You can see the whole technology stack and all the services that are used. Where this might be useful is if in, you're looking at the P&L and you don't see a subscriptions, but you can see here Drip. You know that Drip is a subscription-based service. Maybe that's not their P&L. That would be something to catch and maybe ask them about, find out what's going on there. Maybe they just aren't using it, but still have the code on the website.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the things you want to do as part of getting ready to acquire a site is make sure that you have the people in place to take over any kind of services that you need in advance, right? So if you have no idea how to use Drip and you're taking and you're purchasing a company, maybe you need to have somebody in place who does know how to use it or request a standard operating procedure so that you can learn how to use it. So I would definitely have a list of like all of the kind of the aspects of the business that you're not proficient at, and make sure that you have people in place that can help you with that so you can hit the ground running when you do take over the business.
You know, something that, speaking of Drips, I talked to Rob, who sold Drip to LeadPages a few years ago, and he talked to me about how LeadPages was completely ready and able to switch over to a new website shortly after they closed. They were making plans and building out technology as they were going through due diligence so that they could hit the ground running right away. Something that you might want to do as you're going through a website's technology stack is take a look at what services they're using. If you're going through the QuietLight website, you'll notice that we have Hotjar, for example. Now, I haven't tracked anything with Hotjar on the website in a while. We use it for surveys once in a while. But this would be a service where maybe there's a report that you want to ask for during due diligence. Maybe some heat mapping that would just be useful information for you to be able to see and as you're making your plans. Or Optin Monster, ask, have you run these campaigns before? What was the conversion rate like on these campaigns? And you can start getting really prepared as you're doing your due diligence to make that transition. Of course, some sellers may not be eager to share some of that information with you. So go about that with some level of sensitivity, understanding that they may not be ready to open up all the books to you. But knowing what's there can help you request different reports. And Chuck, you said something before in one of your presentations, probably multiple presentations, and that was ask questions, ask lots and lots of questions.
Yep, absolutely. I always say ask, ask, ask. And even ask questions you know the answers to. I feel like that's like some kind of lawyer tactic that people do, but they ask questions regardless of whether you know the answer, because you almost want to get a seller to lie to you, because then you know how trustworthy they are, right? If somebody's willing to lie to you about something, it's a red flag. So I've seen a lot of people, you know, they'll ask the same questions in multiple ways. And you don't want to be annoying about it, right? Like, don't ask stupid questions, but definitely ask. And I shouldn't say you don't want to ask stupid questions, because almost no question is stupid, right? But we all understand there are stupid questions that you shouldn't ask that just are irrelevant. But don't feel like if it's relevant to you, then it's not a stupid question. So like, ask everything, because the time to ask is before you buy it, right? You don't want to have a bunch of questions after you've inked the check. So, you know, ask early and ask often.
And the other thing too, is you can get more color on a particular answer. I know when I talk to some sellers and ask them, why are you selling? They'll give me an answer one day, and then I talk to them another day and they give me a slightly different answer. And it's not that they're lying. It's that the reasons are complex, you know, that there's more than one reason going on there. And you gain color, you gain more information about what's really going on behind the sale by asking the same question and looking at it in different formats. I know we've started to do video interviews or recorded interviews of some of our clients. And part of the reason for that is because people talk about questions differently than they might write them out. So it's good to ask a lot of those questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Archive.org.
Yeah, this is a great one. So if you're doing some due diligence, you know, there's a whole like industry of people who just buy expired domains, throw new content on it, and then run with the site. And some of them are using them for like private blog networks, but some of them are buying like big sites that are what used to be a big site. And for whatever reason, the site's no longer. So this will give you an idea of, like, in 2008, what did the site look like? Was it a brokerage site or not back then? You know, it's not always a bad thing, but if it was something spammy back then, you might still have, you know, some problems moving forward. So it's also good just to see if you had some ideas of you wanted to try this or try that. You can get an idea for some of the things they've tried in the past by looking at previous screenshots of what the site was like 1, 2, 3, 4 years ago.
Yeah, and I think one of the big challenges that you always have as a buyer, and sellers as well have this issue, right? Sellers know their business intimately because they've lived with it for so many years. As a buyer, you're coming in and trying to compress knowledge that they've gained over the course of, you know, sometimes 20 years now into a decision that you have to make within a week or two. Going back and seeing what the history of the site was, just kind of, again, it adds color, it adds more information into what has this person done in the past with the business. And like you said, maybe you can see some things that they tried and you can ask them about that. If you're looking at the Quiet Light site, you might see that we sold some domains in the past. And if somebody was looking to buy us, they could ask a question on that. You know, why don't you sell domains anymore? And we could go into that whole discussion.
Something else to look for is to look for gaps in the years. So, you know, you can put something on your website, right? And like your robust text telling Wayback Machine not to crawl your site anymore. So if there's like a 3-year gap, why is that gap? Most legitimate sites aren't blocking the Wayback Machine from crawling their site. So, you know, that might raise a red flag and it might be something you want to, you know, dive in on a little deeper.
Awesome. All right, let's move on to trademarkia.com.
Yeah, you know, it's if they told you they have a domain or a trademark, search for it, figure it out. If they've told you they don't have a trademark, search for it. See if somebody else has the trademark, right? Make sure that they're not infringing on somebody else's, what's the word I'm looking for? Somebody else's IP. You don't want to buy a business if they're infringing on other people's stuff.
Yeah, and this can also be very useful in search results if you're advertising on Google and you have competitors that are stepping all over that brand search. If you get that trademark and if you have the ability to get a trademark, you can kick a lot of those guys off. And bidding on brand is usually a very cheap way. But if you have competitors branding against it, that's right on your IP. So searching for that trademark is a useful thing to do. All right, we're moving to the next set of tools. And these tools here seem to be more of search competitive intelligence and taking a look at a site's search profile, or I should just say probably maybe SEM all-encompassing, right? Because this would include AdWords as well.
Yep. So organic and paid. I like SpyFu a lot. It's, you know, you can look at people's history of what kind of ad campaigns they did. So if somebody says, oh, we've only ever run one ad set and haven't done much testing. And then you look back at and it shows you, well, actually they ran 100 different variations of this ad across, you know, 5 years and blah, blah, blah. So you'll be able to see, kind of verify some of the information they said. You can also check and it'll show you, like literally shows you what paid ads they ran and like the text in them. So if you think, oh, I wonder if they've tried this, like you can look back and see what sorts of ads they've run. It's kind of interesting. You can also use this to, right here, like you see the competitor. So they'll show you overlap. So if you know of some competitors, you'll be able to see like what keywords they have overlapping using these Venn diagrams. It's some really cool stuff. And then you can look for opportunity for words that they're going after that you're not. They also have a tool in here somewhere that will allow you to look at specific keywords over time, and then it puts it over a timeline and has the Google updates. So you can see like, okay, they had, you know, this keyword was, you know, ranked number 1, 1, 1, 1, and then drops off to like number 7. And then you say, oh, well, Google did an update right when this happened. So you can potentially know like why they dropped off. It's because, well, Google did this update. So I've seen it where people are using like a private blog network to get a bunch of links. And it's like, you're doing really, really well. And then everything drops off a cliff because Google did an update and it affected it. Or the reverse is true where they went from having nothing to all of a sudden number one rankings, just like overnight. And you can see, okay, well, nobody just all of a sudden goes from zero to number one ranking for 20 different keyword terms. So then you know, well, okay, they must have done something to have that spike. And then you can, you know, dive into whether they're using like, you know, blog networks or paid links or whatever.
Yeah, any sort of quick changes in these results are going to be something to watch out for. So that's overall good good tool. And a lot of these tools out here, Moz, Open Site Explorer, SEMrush, Majestic, Ahrefs. I personally really like Ahrefs. These are all really good tools, and using them in combination is going to give you a sense for how the data all adds up. Understand that when you're looking at data in any of these tools, they have to use third parties to estimate what this is. For example, they're estimating for Quiet Lake Brokerage that our estimated AdWords budget is $3,000. Actually, not too far off from that, but it's not accurate. You know, just understand that these are useful for trends. These are useful for getting another point of data. Nothing's going to replace firsthand tracking, which would be Google Analytics or whatever tool people are using to analyze something, but you can use all these external tools in combination as well to draw a complete picture of what a website's doing and how it's ranking.
And something else to remember is that was, I think, only Google AdWords. So it's not taking into account paid traffic, whether it's Facebook or other things.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. That's right. Let's move on to which one you like SpyFu the best out of these?
They're all kind of different. So there's like different reasons to use different ones, right? And some are for like keyword research. Some have like keyword difficulty tools. So part of due diligence isn't just looking at what the site has done, but where you can go with it. So I like to use a couple of them to do keyword research, see where their gaps are, you know, opportunity for me to grow the business. They all kind of hit different things and do different things well. So I don't have one favorite. I do like SpyFu. I've liked Moz in the past. People swear by SEMrush, Majestic. And then on that list, and you kind of didn't point on it, which I'm guessing maybe you thought I put it in the wrong spot, but the Alexa.com one, I haven't actually used this yet, but it's apparently a new tool that they rolled out. It's a competitor to all these other ones, Moz and Majestic. So they're doing a paid tool just like all these other guys. So I haven't really dove into it yet, but it'd be interesting to maybe see how their data looks.
Yeah, I actually just saw this the other day and was intrigued by it. I haven't dug into this at all, but you would imagine that Alexa's owned by Amazon. You would imagine that they have some pretty good access to tools to be able to estimate this information with some level of accuracy.
And you know, they've been around since when? Like early, probably like 2000 or earlier. So they've been crawling all these sites. So who knows what kind of information they've stored? So you might be able to get some really good info going pretty far back.
Yeah, man, I know you're right on that. I think actually Alexa may have been the first competitive intelligence tool that tried to rank websites. Now, maybe there was somebody else before that, but they were the first ones to really gain traction with that. For a long time, everybody I knew had their Alexa bar up in their browser, and you could see what a site's Alexa ranking was along with its page rank, right? Every marketer back in the early 2000s had those two things up in their toolbars.
It's funny. So I went to the site the other day, just checking it out and looking for their little site ranking number, and I couldn't find it anywhere. So I'm not sure if they still have it or not.
Yeah, I don't know. And I tried to look that up recently as well, and I wasn't able to find it. It was behind actually this paywall, which is how I came across the fact that they're now offering this.
Yeah. And you know, it's for a long time, like, right, Google PageRank and the Alexa ranking have been dead. Like, nobody uses those as a real stat anymore, but I just wanted to check it out.
Yeah, no, it's always interesting stuff. All right, let's move on to page two here. We're going to get into three tools here, Screaming Frog, DeepCrawl.com, and Copyscape. Sure. What do these tools do?
Yeah, the first two are pretty similar to each other. And what they do is you can plug in a domain name and it'll crawl the entire site and it'll look for all kinds of things like errors or not errors, right? So it can show you just by crawling through the site, it'll crawl every single link on a site from every single page. So it shows you like if there's dead links. So if there's stuff that's going to like 404 pages, you know, errors, 500 errors, they'll show you the redirects. So what I've used it for in the past is one, finding those dead pages, right? The 400, 404 errors, and then also finding the redirects. And sometimes you'll see like stuff gets layered where it'll be redirected to this page, which was then redirected to this page, which was then redirected to this page. And ultimately what you should be doing is just going back and linking from the first page to the last page and not using all of these bounces, because with each bounce, you know, you have the potentially you're losing some of that authority that's being passed through.
Yeah, and there are a few services out there that will do an on-site SEO analysis for you. One that I've used in the past that I'll definitely throw a shout out to would be Orange Fox. Jacob Hagberg has done some reports for Quiet Light Brokerage. And what these services do, and what a lot of these tools do, is what these services will do. They just do it in a nice condensed manner. Is they look for opportunities and they also look for potential issues. Like you're saying, if there's tons of redirects in there, that's a problem. You're losing out on authority on those pages. Dead pages, 404s, broken images, images without alt tags, accessibility issues. Yep. These are all things that you want to be looking for, not necessarily as like major red flags, you know, buyer beware, but also as opportunities that if you start to fix and clean these things up, there's going to be a natural lift in rankings on a lot of those long tail keywords that maybe you're on page 10 to 20 right now for. Maybe that'll bump you up to the first 10 results. So a way for you just to grow some opportunity. When you're looking at these three tools, Chuck, The first two
are very similar, right? Screaming Frog is one that you have on your own computer, and then it uses your internet connection to then crawl the site. Deep Crawl, they're running it from their servers. The Screaming Frog is relatively cheap. I forget the amount, but it's $100-$200 a year. The Deep Crawl one is fairly pricey, so I would always recommend the Screaming Frog, but the other one is a good service as well. Just costs a bit more. So there you go. It's £150 a year.
Right. And they do have a free version. I've used the free version. To be honest, it's worth just upgrading to the paid version. Free version will give you just a flavor of what they can do. But if you really want to dig deep and really figure things out, again, here's a 500 URL limit. Most websites are going to blow through that 500 URLs because you have all of your images, you have everything else connected with an individual page. So you go through that 500 pretty quickly. Copyscape is a bit different from these two, though.
Yeah, it's different. I threw in kind of with this just because it's one of those things where, again, you're looking for problems. So you type in your domain and it'll give you list of, you know, places that content may have been stolen from. So kind of similar, but different.
Right. And this can be useful to see if you have people that are maybe trying to just scrape your pages entirely, or if the page you're looking at for some reason is built on shaky ground. This was something that was used a lot more probably, I don't know, 5 to 7 years ago. I know Copyscape was a really big issue or really big useful tool for duplicate content issues. A lot of that has gone away now, but I would imagine you would find copies of content, if somebody's publishing their blog content, say, on Medium or LinkedIn, I imagine this would probably pick up on that.
Yeah, I believe so. And, you know, when we talk about like the duplicate content issue, we're talking about like, right, for organic search, but there's also the duplicate content issue where, hey, everything on this website was stolen from somewhere else and you're going to get sued because you stole everybody's content, right? So I would be checking to make sure that people aren't stealing other people's content, you know, so I think that's a good part of due diligence.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Public www. This is a tool I have not heard of.
Yeah. It's a great tool. It kind of is in the vein of like a Google, right? But what's cool about it is instead of like, if I want to search for something on Google, Google looks at what is displayed on the page. Meaning if I search for Chuck, it's looking for, if somebody were to look at a web page and see the word Chuck on it, then it might come up, right? But with this website, it's actually looking at the source code. So if somebody had a comment that was Chuck, it would potentially come up there. So getting away from the word Chuck, right? It's more for if you want to look at like analytics code or if you want to find somebody's affiliate ID. So if somebody says, hey, I'm just running AdSense on this site and I don't have it anywhere else, well, you could put in the AdSense number and it'll show you all the sites that are using that same AdSense ID on their website, right? So you can look for maybe they're doing some competing stuff. Maybe they just, you know, they're driving more income through the AdSense by having the multiple sites versus the one. And it's not complete, right? It's only as much as they crawl. So they're only going to have as much data of the websites they crawl, but you can definitely find some stuff. You can also use it. A little tip here would be, let's say you have an affiliate product you're promoting, right? And you're making some money off of that. And say you found a new product you want to promote and it makes 10 times the amount of money for each one you sell. And you know that like, oh, this product If I switch it to this one, I'm going to make 10x. Well, you can look for everybody who was promoting this old product and then go and try to acquire those sites and switch them to the new affiliate product and 10x the revenue. So a lot of different things you can do with that.
And I've heard some people ask about that specifically with affiliate sites. You know, how do I know that this is all coming from the site that I'm buying? And so this would be one tool that you could use. The other thing I could see this being useful for is if you have a tool, this would be a pretty rare case, but if you're buying a business that has a tool that's used on outside websites, a WordPress plugin site, WordPress theme site, or any other tool like that, you could start to get some idea as for the installation volume using a tool like this. All right, spyonweb.com.
So similar, right? It's looking for people's AdSense IDs and things like that. It's not as complete. With the other one, you can search for a lot more different types of things, but still a useful tool.
Right. And it gives you some interesting information as far as who's also sharing this IP address, DNS server. So again, it's not a ton of information here, but just coloring it in. And look at this. We have our Alexa rank.
There you go.
So if you want to find out what the Alexa rank is, just go to Spy on Web. And you can also see the PageRank, which is saying quite like brokerage is a question mark for PageRank. So that would have been information that would have scared me about 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
All right. Domain IQ.
Yep. So Domain IQ and then the other two that were listed. These are for finding out information about a domain name, right? So when was it registered? How many times has the DNS changed? Has the ownership changed recently? What other domains are on the same server or same IP block or same IP address? So if you're buying something from somebody and they say this is the only site they have, and then you start looking up and down the IP range or looking on the server or the same IP, and you see that there's other domain names that are the same thing and they're not disclosing it to you, you know, that's potentially going to be an issue. You can look up who is the owner. So if like similar registration name or similar email address used to register the domain, it'll show you all of the domains they own that are using that registration information. Now, these are all, for the most part, paid services. So if you want to get like the good data, you got to pay for it. But they do give you a basic level of information for free.
Right. I don't think anybody has to use all of these tools. You know, pick one or two out of each of these categories that you want to use. The only one where I would recommend maybe using multiple ones would be in this search intelligence, the SpyFu, Moz, and SEMrush.
Yep.
I think it might be worthwhile having upwards of three, maybe four, depending on how Alexa turns out, those services. Because like you said, they all do slightly different things.
It's a matter of like what they've indexed, right? So they each have their own crawlers. And none of them are going to crawl exactly the same subset of the internet. So it's just, you're going to find different things by using different ones.
Right. And they all have different levels of accuracy. You can see here, Domain IQ is showing our Alexa rank to be higher than the last one. So, and also has a few other bits of information that I would say are incorrect. But again, you use these points of data.
Not worth $5,000, the appraised value.
That was just greater. Is it less? It's less than $500. So, and we have more than 24 backlinks. But again, all these tools are to be used in combination with each other to put together a large picture. Obviously, a tool like Google Analytics, firsthand, you're going to want to use that first. And then these tools are being used to fill in the gaps.
Yeah. And also, like, know what a tool is good at. So, like, that last one, you're not going to use that tool for the appraised value, right? Like, that's nonsense. But if you scroll up a little bit, if you click on, let's see here, click on like ownership record in the blue buttons there. Let's see if it'll.
We got gears turning here. There we go.
Okay. So it shows you who the owner is. When's the last time you updated? When it expires, the age of it, right? So you've owned it for just about almost 11 years. You're using Cloudflare. Here's the whois info.
So it's got a bad corporation name. I got to update that.
Well, there you go. And go back one more time. I want to click on one more thing.
All these tools take too long to load up. Let's move on because this one is getting a little bit long. Let's get on to the bandcheck.com.
Yeah. So this one is, and it's not 100%, right? But you can type in an AdSense account and it'll tell you if the AdSense account has been banned. Again, not 100%, but if it says it's banned, that's probably a good indication. I'm sorry, not the AdSense account number, but the actual domain name, right? So if somebody says, oh, I switched monetization methods because I didn't like AdSense and I was making a bunch more money with this. Well, maybe that's not the case. Maybe it's that they got banned. So this is a good one that can tell you whether they've been not 100%, right? But if it says they've been banned, then they probably have been, right?
Good news. We can start making money with QuietLight Brokerage because it came back and it says it is not banned from Google AdSense.
I wonder how that helps with our value of the $500.
Hopefully it increases it a little bit. So all you buyers looking to buy a business, we're going to require that you click on an AdSense ad because I think that's completely in line with their terms of service.
Yeah.
Required clicks. Socialmention.com.
Yeah, so just, you know, you can type in various things here and it'll just tell you where it's being mentioned as far as social goes. So just a good tool for doing some basic due diligence.
Yeah, and this might be useful to do use in combination with like a Google Trends to be able to see. Google Trends is measuring the data on the on Google itself, looking at how the different search engines are also, different social media networks are also processing that data. It's going to have a different look than just what Google has. On that note, I would say BuzzSumo, which is not on your list. Is another tool that I would recommend adding. And it's a paid tool. They do have a free option, but you can take a look to see what content has done really well on a particular domain name, as well as what content in that specific niche also does well. So you can really get a sense for how popular a niche is and what's getting shared and what's not, both within Google, but also within the social media. BuzzSumo was fantastic.
And this one definitely should have been on my list, and I'm not sure why it wasn't, but I actually like this one a lot better. So
we'll add this to the list for when people want to download it. Last one, it would be just going direct to the source of Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. Almost every website these days has presence on all of these social media networks. Visit their individual pages. I assume that's kind of the lesson there.
Yeah. And again, with like, say like a LinkedIn, right? Looking at the person's profile, looking how many connections they have. Like, are they in a niche where they should have 500 LinkedIn connections and they've only got three? Maybe that tells you something, right? Or, you know, why are they connected with all of these hackers or, you know, whatever, right? So it's just a matter of, again, researching the people and not just the business. So I think it's a good tool for researching people.
Awesome. All right. So that's a lot of tools that we just went over. Let's talk just a couple lessons, and we're running pretty long on this podcast. So we'll talk just a couple lessons about due diligence. I'm going to turn off the screen sharing here and turn off the screen share and talk a couple lessons about due diligence. What would you say for somebody who's going about due diligence the first time? What couple of lessons would you say that or principles should they really use in their due diligence efforts?
So I think one of the biggest things is first and foremost, you don't know what you don't know, all right? So having people to help advise you on what to search for and what to look for can be critical. So don't just think you know everything, because none of us know everything, especially when it comes to the different tricks and tactics people can employ to inflate their numbers and what they're doing. What else? Do you have any that you would suggest?
I would. So on that note, obviously bring in people like an attorney, bring in an accountant. As I said before, they'll be careful when you do so because they are being brought in with a specific purpose in mind. They're being brought in to look for liabilities, they're being brought in to look for problems. And you are the business owner trying to make a business decision. Your accountant is trying to make an accountant decision. Your lawyer is trying to make a legal decision. And so you have to take their advice and put it into a broader framework of, is this a good business choice for you? Use their bits of data as single points of data and create a whole picture with that. The other thing that you said, we already covered this once, ask. Don't be afraid to ask for questions. And then the third thing that I would recommend is keep good records of what you have looked at. I know when I'm working through a due diligence with a client, if a buyer comes back and asks for the same documents that they may have already received earlier on, extremely annoying for a seller who doesn't understand why they even needed it in the first place. And a lot of sellers get skeptical of buyers. They think this person isn't really serious about it. They're just looking and fishing for information. And if you end up asking for the same documents three or four times, even twice, it starts to grow those seeds of doubt into bigger than just seeds. And it can cause a lot of problems for you later on. So be organized in your due diligence, just as you want your seller to be organized and giving you documentation so that you know what you have. and work off a checklist would be the last thing that I would suggest, but don't be afraid to add to that checklist as you go through.
Sure. And something else I would add, kind of similar to what you're talking about, a little different, is with a seller, they're interested in knowing that you're going to do well with their business. And whether you realize it or not, the questions you ask them are important to them almost always. So if you're not asking good questions, they're going to think that you're not serious or that you're not going to do well with their business. And we often see that buyer or sellers won't always sell to the person who offers the most money. Oftentimes, they're selling to the person they think is going to do best with their business or somebody that they like. And I see it time and time again. Recently, we had a nice seven-figure deal I was working with. And every time we get off the call, I do a wrap-up call with the seller. Okay, what did you think? And they're like, well, that person didn't ask any good questions. Like, I don't want to sell my business to them. So make sure that you're doing some due diligence up front. You're looking into these things and you have good questions that you're asking that are relevant to the business.
Yeah, absolutely. Doing that research ahead of time, not wasting the seller's time on the conference call is important. A lot of these sellers, when they go to sell their business, within that first week, they're going to do half a dozen to a dozen conference calls, and it's exhausting to do. So if they get on the call and somebody's asking the question that was covered right up front, you know, that there's a good place to ask questions that have already been answered. And then there's obviously you haven't done your homework sort of questions. So do that basic homework ahead of time so that people know that you put in that upfront research. One thing I'll add to that, though, is if there is something that you're not familiar with, ask them about it and don't be afraid about that. At the end of the day, as a buyer, you want to protect your money. You want to make sure you're not making a bad investment. So don't be afraid to ask those questions. And if you ever have questions about, can we discuss this or what do you think, use the broker. We're here to advise both the buyer and the seller through that process. We want to see a good deal done for our client.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. This has been really long, but I think good information. So Chuck, thanks so much for coming on, and maybe down the road, we'll do another one of these.
Sounds good. Appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.